present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Horrocks.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. Here's an item from the Chelmsford Weekly News, read by Brian Perkins.
Pictured above are Claire Hoy and Tracy Rathbone outside Chelmsford Cathedral before their graduation ceremony on Friday. They both graduated with a BSc in agriculture.
Thanks to R.J. Jones of Chelmsford for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Susan Jeffries. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Armando Iannucci. Francis, your first question. How did a conflict of interest put paid to an interesting conflict?
I think this is Neil Hamilton, MP. And it's the most alarming story. I saw a headline saying that he'd been taking money from Greer. And I had no idea that Germaine Greer was so rich, but apparently she's been dishing out dosh all over the shop. No, it's her distant cousin, Ian Greer, Associates, who were going to see The Guardian, but then pulled out at the last minute. Not something you'd ever hear Germaine Greer accuse people of doing. But it was a most peculiar story, because Hamilton originally said he'd never taken any money from Greer, hadn't had a financial arrangement with him, that's his exact phrase. And then he said, yes, I did accept 10,000 quid, of course, from him. But that's not a financial arrangement. This is, there's a wonderful quote. I wrote it down. It was so impressive. He said, similar payments are frequently made throughout industry to people in all walks of life. Which is wonderful, if true, because I've never had one of these 10,000 quid payments from Ian Greer, but apparently I'm the only one all over the country. There are people receiving these unsolicited gifts from Ian Greer, cleaning ladies, you name it. I mean, can't get on the bus to go to work without tipping the conductor 10,000 quid. And people in all walks of life are receiving this largesse. And Neil Hamilton just happened to be one of them. And the fact that he's an MP is neither here nor there. And The Guardian, wickedly, has suggested that it's a bit dodgy in some mysterious way.
I think it might be a wheeze worth trying out just going to the Al-Fayed offices in Park Lane and saying, I've come about the envelope. It's worth a go, isn't it? It's like a bus fare.
Motorbike messengers arrive every 5 minutes.
Yeah. I enjoyed Hamilton's defence, which was that Al-Fayed was a slimy liar and a shifty crook. If he was a slimy liar and a shifty crook, I couldn't see why he'd taken his money. This seemed an odd sort of defence to stand up and say.
But he also
can't
described
a word this man says. I know, because I've taken money off him.
No, but he also described him as a convivial acquaintance, which was why he went to the Paris Ritz. He said he was a liar and a crook, but he was a convivial acquaintance, and we hadn't had a holiday for years and years. And then he said, why not go to the Paris Ritz at my expense, run up huge bar bills? And Hamilton thought this was just an act of pure friendly generosity, nothing to do with the fact he was an MP or that Fayed had gone around saying, you can buy these MPs the way you can hail a taxi, I think he said, didn't he, in that programme, which wasn't broadcast. And then there was old Hamilton with his meter ticking over, not realising he was a taxi. He thought he was just a normal family saloon.
In a sensational twist, Michael Heseltine and John Major had both been subpoenaed to give evidence. It's not unusual for senior cabinet ministers to appear in court, but it's very strange when neither of them is Michael Howard. So 2 points to Francis. Susan, who pays their premium religiously?
Oh, is this the new version of Vatican Roulette? Ages ago there used to be these insurance ads of pictures of the same person at 20. I never used to worry about insurance. 30, a little bit more wrinkled. 60, very, very worried. They're now going to start running them with the Pope, because there's an insurance firm, I think it's somewhere offshore insurance firm, that insures the Catholic Church against their priests begetting. And a spokesman today said that this was a sensible precaution. Lucky them, eh? The rest of us aren't allowed those.
Yes, it's an insurance company regulated by Ofrock. Refers to the insurance fund set up by the Catholic Church for claims arising from the sexual misbehaviour of priests. The policy covers almost everything, as indeed do many of the priests. News of the comprehensive all-risks policy excludes pregnancies caused by acts of God. But few Anglican churchmen believe that anyway. Armando, welcome back to the News Quiz as a panellist. Who's coming home from Blackpool?
This is Tony Blair, who quoted the words of the football anthem, Football's Coming Home, which magnificently bound the country together, and then we went on to lose. So, I don't know why he quoted that. It was described as a very evangelical speech at the conference, where he talked about Old Testament prophets and how he was going to put a windfall tax on them. He talked about the New Testament and how it's now going to be called New Testament because it's dropped its commitment to Commandment 4. And then Barbara Castle stood up and they shot her.
The conference was rocked by the news that hackers had been reading Mr. Blair's pager notes. These included shocking instructions such as comb your hair and did you remember to eat your sandwiches? All that was missing was, if you must do that, use a hanky. So 2 points to you, Armando, and Alan, listen to this.
Picture me upon your knee with tea for two and two for tea. Just me for you and you for me alone.
Alan, who disliked bitter tea? Running hot and cold.
I just remember that line about knowing Doris Day before she was a virgin. That was her. Well then, Chancellor Cole is a nasty old soul. I'm minded to think, although if you stuck up an undesirability roster and you had a top crowd and Margaret Thatcher, it'd be difficult to know who was jockeying for top position, wouldn't you? Apparently she used to have him over for hot jam tea with all the trimmings and then knock him about. And he had this... He hated her. God knows why. He said this very strange thing which caused all sorts of stirrings in me. I won't tell you which part of the body was stirred, but he said being with Margaret Thatcher was like having a very hot bath and a very cold one. And I misread this in the paper. I imagine this elephantine man who has 14 teas a day leaping to the jacuzzi with our own beloved Iron Lady. I don't know. I can't think why they didn't get on. They're two nicer people you couldn't wish to meet. But she sat him round there and handbag him.
Is it just me, or is the sort of steady mental and physical deterioration of Margaret Thatcher one of the delights of the last 6 years?
It's not just you.
It's not just me. Quite good.
Chancellor Kohl has been plugging a book called I Wanted Germany's Unity. But he's not the first Chancellor to take a fancy to one of the Mitford sisters. One for the older listeners there, I think. And at the end of round one, everybody has scored 4 points. We start round two with an item spotted in the Daily Telegraph.
Despite his abominable reputation as a whimsical sadist, coward, drunkard, rapist and murderer, Nicu Ceaușescu was not entirely unpopular in Romania.
Thank you, John Coulthurst of Leicester, for sending us that. Francis, whose story was rung out on the line?
I think this could be Vasso, Madame Vasso, to give her her professional title. She seems to be some sort of species of mumbo-jumbo merchant, bit of tarot reading, bit of astrology, bit of this, bit of that. And the main thing she does, to judge by the photographs of her, is she sits underneath a great big blue plastic pyramid in her spare bedroom and tries to pick up messages from the other world. And they came through all the time. Fergie's on the blower once an hour, saying, Vasso, Vasso, quick, get the tarot cards out. I want to know what the future holds for me. I want big potatoes now. Which I thought was very odd, because you know, if you followed her battle with weight over the years, you'd think the last thing she needs is big potatoes. But it turns out this was a code meaning big money. So all their conversations took place in code so that they wouldn't leak in the way that Squidgy Gate and Camilla Gate did. Very successful precaution, a security precaution. And so all her lovers, Fergie's lovers, were referred to as number one, number two, number 438, that sort of thing. Very hard to remember who they all were, but she managed. And Princess Di was called Blondie, because she's got blonde hair, I suppose. By the same token, Duchess of York could be called... Well, she could be ready. whenever you are ready.
This is the continuing story of the Duchess of York, whose intimate conversations were made available on a phone line. This was banned on a request from Buckingham Palace after the Queen had seen Prince Philip's phone bill. After the line was cut off, disappointed callers were offered the number of Fergie's mobile phone, but no one could get through, as she seemed to have it off all the time. In addition to her other loves, it was revealed that Fergie chased a Saudi prince who she thought was interested. Then she learned that in his country, one off the wrist is the penalty for adultery. Susan, which house member had a fine old time at home?
Which house member had a fine old time at home?
Think Essex.
Oh, it's Our Lady of the Hormone Replacements, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, Teresa. She's had to put back all the charming original features of her lovely, gracious home that she'd knocked down and done rather tacky things. She put stick-on lattice work on the original windows. Really cheapo stuff. Anyhow, it's all had to go back, and it's cost her a lot of money. She's terribly disappointed because she and hubby had sunk all their money into this gracious and lovely Essex home. But it's all right now. It's all been put back, all the original things. She's peeled off these sticky lattice work window. She's taken those little cart horses that pull the flowers along. She's taken the ding-dong Avon calling bell off, and everything's hunky-dory again. Lovely woman.
It's about MP Theresa Gorman and her husband Jim, who are each fined £3,000 for making alterations to their Grade 2 listed house. Magistrates ruled that the Elizabethan porch wasn't in keeping with the local Essex tradition of York stone-style cladding adorned by a half-timbered satellite dish. The Gormans have spent over £400,000 on the house, which is valued today at little more than half that. So the housing slump does have something to cheer us up after all. Armando, your piece of music.
From Russia with love I fly to you, much wiser since my goodbye to you.
Who was shaken but not stirred by his blundering?
Is this the Keystone spy? Some documents have been unearthed or released or whatever. I have to confess, I didn't read this story. I read the headlines and I thought...
His name was actually Bond.
Yes, he was called Bond. He was comrade sort of Jerome Bond or something like that. And
couldn't do anything right. He would get into his Aston Martin and fire himself to the roof.
But yes, no, there's an incompetent Bond spy. Was he British but a double agent?
No, he was Russian. He came here in 1941. I don't know where he thought he was going. But anyway, he arrived in Britain in 1941 and did all this stuff. And he'd pull out his gun and a little flag would drop saying, bang.
Newly released government files published this week revealed that Russia had a blundering James Bond-style agent in London. The double agent, his code name was Brian, was sent with instructions to work with... He was sent with instructions to work with M and Q, so he spent 2 years attacking the shelves in a DIY store. When he eventually got to the right place, Brian made the obvious beginner's mistake for a pretend British spy. He attended an embassy reception with a woman on his arm. And at the end of round two, the scores are still everybody even with 8. Susan, listen to this piece of music.
Well, Cotton failed, now all I can say is I threw it all away. Oh, I was just a boy, giving it all away.
Who handed out Sterling near Sterling?
It's possibly Kevin, possibly Steve. He is tattooed. It's the loveliest story of the week. There's a mysterious southerner wandering the highlands and lowlands of Scotland with a big bag of money, shoving it in people's pockets, buying drinks all around. He claims to be a lottery winner, but nobody's sure of that. And he's off out by the Isle of Skye, I think. Then we'll find out who he is. But it's like a mythical, it's like something from the legends, isn't it?
It's like the Dartmoor Panther, isn't it?
Yes.
Really?
No.
For the next 50 years, this man will be sighted from time to time.
Yeah. He used to get that in the 70s. People used to swear that Arabs had come up to them and thrust huge amounts of money for some trifling favour.
They were often called Muhammad Al-Fayed, I think.
They often were. Kevin is taking the whole envelope culture up to Scotland and thrusting it on them there, but he requires nothing back.
Armando, where was it wise to tune in during drive time?
Is this a radio question?
Yes.
It is.
Hang on, I'm erecting a big blue pyramid above me. Wonderful. It's going to pick up... Radio Cornwall.
Radio Cornwall.
Someone in Radio Cornwall was being sacked. There was massive Burtian cuts or something in Radio Cornwall, and one of the disc jockeys decided he'd had enough.
No.
Sorry.
I didn't even know there was a Radio Cornwall, but apparently it belonged to Radio Cornwall. Well, they won't hear this. I can say anything I like about them. Not allowed to listen to this. Not allowed to listen to anything but Radio Cornwall, which is 4 hours of Joan the Wad and clotted cream recipes, I suppose. But if you work for Radio Cornwall, your radio is pre-tuned to Radio Cornwall. If you listen to anything else, you're sacked. And the one, I suppose, executive of Radio Cornwall is this strange figure with a corncob pipe and Wellington boots, smelling of the sea, puts down his net, shoves his head through the window and says, you're sacked. You're done for. A strange Paul Darkian thing. They do say, as on dark nights across the moor, you can hear people listening to Radio 2. The headless Chris Evans riding across Dartmoor. But anyway, that's what the story is. You can't hear anything else. They're not going to get very advanced in Cornwall if all they listen to is Radio Cornwall.
The story concerns BBC Radio Cornwall's new loyalty directive, whereby staff caught tuned to other stations in company cars will be banned from using the cars. The move backfired with the introduction of spot checks, which resulted in many more accidents. Drivers would lose control while frantically retuning to Radio Cornwall, or would fall asleep at the wheel 5 seconds later. The station is hoping to regain its traditional audience among the Cornish fishing community when it starts broadcasting in Spanish. Alan, how did a fivesome from Fife become a foursome on the fairway?
Oh, this is an extremely sad story. You wouldn't catch something like that on Radio Cornwall, which is a place of great taste. Well, these five blokes went out to play golf. One of them dropped dead and only four came home, but they didn't come home until they'd finished the 18th hole. They played through. Teed off on his conch and were off it back. I mean, that's what golfers are like. I mean, it's the Dennis Thatcher story, isn't it? I mean, they are all like that golfer. They're all barking mad. And vicious. Anyway, this bloke is probably still out there. I don't know. He is now a hazard. Tee off on the 17th, and what's that rather soggy noise? I'm afraid it's sunk in. Have you got a wedge? Yes.
I was very careful about it, because when he died, what they did was they pulled his corpse away and put a 5p down where it was, and then went to the shop and then put it back again.
So as not to incur penalty shots.
Absolutely, yeah.
Although it was obviously a shock to play a round of golf with a corpse, in many ways it was a culmination of their sporting ambition. Now they know what it's like to partner Nick Faldo. And at the end of round three, the scores are still level on 12 points for each team. Before we start the final round, here's a story seen in the Cameroon Tribune via Mrs. P. Stone of Kent.
16 people are reported to have lost their sexual organs from handshakes with two young men. The 16 victims were taken to traditional healers since modern medicine is yet to make provision for such exigencies. The shrinking of the male organ is said to be an act of witchcraft contrary to Article 251 of the Penal Code.
Francis, your musical clue. That was the flight of the bumblebee. Why, according to science, have you never heard that before?
Well, I think this is that in the olden days, we used to say, according to all the laws of aerodynamics, the bumblebee can't fly, even though any fool can see that it can. But it used to be a jolly good metaphor, particularly for foreign reporting, I found. You know, if you were writing a piece about the latest Lebanese government, which seems to have survived against all the odds, you start to say, all the laws of aerodynamics say that the bumblebee cannot fly. The same applies to Lebanon. And now we've been robbed of this because it turns out they got it all wrong, as I could have told them years ago. Bees can fly. Astonishing scoop of the week. And apparently elephants can walk. And Fergie knows how to use the telephone. All these facts are coming out just now.
What led them to believe it couldn't fly? Did they find 30 bumblebees queuing for a trolley bus?
No, they thought they were...
It was a starboard engine. The size of the bee's body and the size of the wings didn't seem...
Rigid wing system. Household word where entomologists foregather, but even I have seen the buggers fly past. I believe the evidence of my own eyes. Just they weren't bumblebees. What else could they have been?
Fergie used to dress as a bumblebee.
She did.
In
she
the good
wore
old
one
days.
To a party in America once. Yeah. You remember it was black and orange stripes.
Wonders for
with
her.
Wings at the back. Yeah. It had some strange silken attachments.
Very, very big wings.
But that wouldn't fly. That's where it all started, you see. That's the problem.
Hoped to be shagged by a passing cockroach, didn't you? Experiments with dead bees prove the theory because dead bees don't glide. The same experiment proved that they don't walk, speak French, play table tennis, or ask questions for Ian Greer. Susan, whose TV station was a joint venture?
Amsterdam. A lot of potheads got together, backed by some big American money, and they were going to open a hashish TV channel, sort of going on about the delights of it, things you can make out of it, clothes you can make out of hemp, that sort of thing. And everybody gathered round their sets for the opening day, and they were all too stoned out of their minds to do anything about it. So you just got this zzzz going. Everybody said, "Oh, that's great, man. Yeah, that's good. We'll have more of that." Advertising's rolling in. It's a big success.
Yes, absolutely correct. It refers to a Dutch satellite television station entirely devoted to the topic of cannabis. It had to abandon its pilot program because staff were too stoned. Despite the setback, program makers were said to be feeling optimistic, cheerful, and a little bit dizzy if they stood up too quickly. Armando, who has too much head for heights?
Too much head for heights. Hang on a bit. This was about 5 months ago, isn't this?
No.
The pilot who was scared of heights. The tornado pilot, or the one that crashed?
No.
Yes.
Oh my God! Is it your appendix again?
Yes, here we go.
I'm not doing the trick with the knife and the skewer again.
No, it's the RAF, and the heads are too big for the helmets, and so they get stuck. I don't know if the higher you go, your head expands or something, and fills up your helmet, and then the cockpit.
They can't see planes coming from behind, or indeed bees. It's fine provided you're looking straight forward, but when they turn their heads, they wedge in the cockpit. It's a wonderful thought. All these blokes flying there at 3,000 miles an hour, I'm not seeing anything there. But they look, backing out of the garage. You do that in the tornado, and before you know it, there it is. That's why they all crash.
And they've now perfected this new move where they fly the plane sideways because all their heads are at 90 degrees.
Basically, it seems air crew are just getting too big. So when pilots hear the order, chocks away, or no bandits at 3 o'clock, it just means they've been put on a diet. Alan, whose demise was not to be sneezed at?
Somebody dead. a lot of people died a long time ago by sneezing.
Yes.
So this was Cro-Magnon man who had enormous nostrils.
And hay fever.
I'm only spitballing here. Let us assume that Neanderthals had huge noses, which ran all the time, and they were likely to get colds as the result. This is a silly thing. We wouldn't get this on Radio Cornwall. So Neanderthals had enormous nostrils, and germs got up them, and that's why Neanderthals died.
Precisely.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, don't be silly.
In fact, he gets 3 points for that because it's so boring having even scores every week. This is the discovery that Neanderthal man died out because he had a big
Greer
nose.
This is the Ian Greer technique, is it? A quick 10,000 quid under the desk and you hand him a letter.
I cost a lot less. Yeah, Alan slips me an envelope. It's got 12p and a couple of discount pizza coupons in it.
Cash for answers, scandal.
This is the discovery that Neanderthal man died out because he had a big nose which left him vulnerable to repeated bouts of flu. But then, of course, wandering around in a loincloth in the middle of the Ice Age can't have helped either. These severe colds would have been avoided if Neanderthal man had discovered fire, though they actually had discovered fire, but unfortunately one of them sneezed. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Yes, Simon, this is from the Cornish Guardian. It's from the massive classified advertising section of the Cornish Guardian. It goes on for pages because there's so much happening in Cornwall and they lead such interesting lives. It's the Lonely Hearts column, which, as you would imagine, is enormous in Cornwall. Gentleman 46, nice, warm, funny, intelligent, professional, animal painter, slim, quite good looking, 5'9", own hair and teeth, original and imaginative, looking for initially friendship with any lady who is good upbeat company. A painting of a hamster of your choice for any brave applicant.
Susan, have you brought a clipping for us?
I've brought two very short ones. One I've torn out in such an inept way that I can't think where it's from. It's one of today's dailies. There's a lot of stories about unpleasantness in supermarket chickens. And they've been around the supermarkets testing them. And Marks and Spencer said the tests only threw up two bacteria cases. But then there's a little short one which Mike Kelly from Suffolk sends. It's a snip, actually. It's quite a bargain. Oil painting, Laughing Cavalier, original, £40.
Armando.
Right, this is from the Wolverhampton Express and Star. And it says that an open day is planned at Wolverhamptonshire's Bushbury Crematorium to help boost trade. Guided tours will be given and visitors will be shown how equipment works.
Alan.
Mine is from the Vancouver Sun. It was sent in by me. It was thanks to a sharp-eyed Air Canada steward that Vancouver Customs were able yesterday to seize more than 5 kilos of concealed heroin. Unluckily for the woman smuggler, she'd been on the same outgoing Friday flight as steward Ted Hanley, who served her again on Monday's incoming one. And as Ted remarked, even I know it takes more than a weekend to get that pregnant. Sort of visual joke.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final scores. Francis and Susan have 16 points, but Alan and Armando are this week's winners with 17. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the big issue sent in by Deirdre Ackland of Swindon.
A Taiwanese pet shop owner has started to sell bonsai dinosaurs. Mr. Kim Boo Yuck placed adverts in a newspaper claiming that using Jurassic Park technology, he had bred a selection of prehistoric pygmy monsters, which were now for sale. Reaction was immediate, with over 200 transactions in the first week, including 86 Tyrannosaurus rexes, 60 pterodactyls, and one man-eating mollusk. Mr. Boo Yuck looks set for fame and fortune, and it was only when the dwarf carnivores displayed a predilection for sunflower seeds over raw meat that it was discovered they were actually gerbils concealed within India rubber dinosaur outfits. I knew something was wrong, admitted one customer, when I noticed my velociraptor had whiskers.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Susan Jeffries and Amanda Iannucci. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The German script was by Ian Pattinson, with Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith, and the producer was Alan Evans. Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Wien, Susan Jeffries and Amanda Iannucci. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith and the producer was Alan Evans.